It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Sierra Leone reportedly seals its borders to contain the Ebola virus. World Health Organization says nearly 190 health workers have died of the disease. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Sierra Leone Tuesday reportedly sealed its borders with Liberia and Guinea, the other two West African countries hit hard by the Ebola epidemic. An army spokesman told Reuters the move aimed at halting the spread of the deadly virus, which has killed more than 2,800 people. A Sierra Leone official told the Associated Press on Tuesday the country's unprecedented three-day lockdown found 130 new cases of Ebola, with 70 suspected cases under testing. The Deputy Minister for Political and Public Affairs, Kara Mokaba, says more than 90 bodies were also discovered, as thousands of volunteers fanned out across the nation of 6 million to hand out information. The World Health Organization Tuesday said as of September 22nd, nearly 190 healthcare workers have died of Ebola out of nearly 350 infected. U.S. researchers Tuesday said as many as 1.4 million people in West Africa could be infected with the disease by January unless the epidemic is brought under control. Centers for Disease Control Director Dr. Tom Frieden says the epidemic can be contained.
If you get enough people effectively isolated, the epidemic can be stopped. And when you reach a high enough number, the number of cases plummets rapidly, almost as rapidly as the exponential rise we're seeing now.
The CDC says once about 70% of people with Ebola are isolated or under medical care, the number of cases will begin to go down. This is VOA News. Meanwhile, experimental Ebola drugs are being tested in West Africa for the first time as part of an initiative to quickly find treatments for the disease. A London-based charity, the Wellcome Trust, says it's giving more than $5 million so a consortium of eight groups, research institutions, along with the World Health Organization, can set up clinical tests at Ebola treatment centers. In Liberia, the epicenter of the epidemic, reporter Benno Mulchner reports there is a growing sense of hope among people like street vendor J.C. Toe as the first of some 3,000 U.S. troops arrive in the country to assist in the effort to combat Ebola.
6 months into the world's worst Ebola outbreak, she hopes the 3,000 U.S. soldiers can bring the help the Liberian government was unable to provide.
So we pray that the American troops come, that will be able to help our Liberian sisters and fellow, because they're killing people a lot.
Among other things, the United States has committed $175 million and will build 17 new healthcare facilities in the region with 100 beds each and train up to 500 healthcare providers per week. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf called America's help a significant moment in the battle against Ebola. More than 100 U.S. military personnel should be in West Africa by the end of the week, with more to follow. Benno Möchler for VOA News, Monrovia.
In a Reuters interview, the head of the African Development Bank warned West Africa will continue to be in need of international help for years and called on corporations to get involved. Donald Kabaruka said he would like to see business step forward, urging mining companies in the region to do more to protect more than just their operations and future investments, but their expertise in the battle against Ebola. A German-American journalist who kidnapped in Somalia more than 2.5 years ago has been freed. 45-year-old Michael Scott Moore was released Tuesday in the Somali town of Galkayo. The German magazine Der Spiegel says Moore was brought by small airplane to the capital, Mogadishu, taken by German officials to a safe place for a medical and psychological evaluation. He was kidnapped in January 2012 while doing research for a book on Somali piracy. Dozens of Egyptians led by the Egyptian Press Syndicate have begun hunger strikes demanding the release of imprisoned activists, including U.S. citizen Mohammed Sultan and Egyptian blogger Ahmed Duma. They say have been unfairly detained. Egyptian journalist Mona Salim says this is her second hunger strike against the so-called protest law to demand release of political detainees. That law passed last year gives security forces power to ban public gatherings larger than 10 people. South Africa's government says it has not yet awarded Russia a contract worth $50 billion to build 8 nuclear power plants, saying the government merely signed a cooperation agreement. Moscow's Atomic Energy Agency announced it won the contract Monday. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia welcomes a U.S. CDC projection on the Ebola epidemic in West Africa.
Not only will this help us reinforce our understanding about this fight, they will also enable us to make the case to the world for much-needed international support and assistance.
Louise Brown is Liberia's information minister. The UN says the Ebola crisis threatens Liberia's social, economic, and political security. The wheels of justice are slow for about 70% of Nigeria's nearly 60,000 prisoners. A new research says education and language skills play a big role for women and media in Africa. And South Sudan's on and off again peace talks have resumed in Addis Ababa.
What needs to be done, particularly during this session, is one, for the parties to go on into the implementation of the matrix that would lead them into the disengagement of troops and fully implement the cessation of hostilities.
Seyoum Mesfin is the lead mediator for the IGA-sponsored South Sudan peace talks. And in Malawi, a national identification system continues to elude the citizens. Those stories plus Mark Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Liberian government says it welcomes the release by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention of a new statistical model which predicts a huge jump in the number of Ebola cases in West Africa to as many as 1.4 million if nothing is done. But the CDC said the disease can be controlled by isolating large numbers of those infected. Liberia's Information Minister Louise Brown says the CDC report will help his government and its partners not only to focus on the ongoing fight against Ebola, but also to make the case for more urgent international support.
The government welcomes the predictive tool released by the Centers for Disease Control as a useful step in, first of all, helping us understand where we are and giving us a sort of means by which we can predict and calculate the progress we are making. Not only will this help us reinforce our understanding about this fight, they will also enable us to make the case to the world for much-needed international support and assistance.
I think it says here, people who are not separated from others while they are sick risk infecting about two other persons. What is your government doing to make sure that people who are infected get places where they can stay?
That is why we have developed, first of all, this two-pronged approach to fighting the virus. One is to ensure that we have enough treatment facilities, enough bed spaces to be able to extract individuals from their homes and their communities. The second is to engage in increased awareness programs and community sensitization by which communities take ownership and by which individuals take ownership for protecting themselves. Even on Sunday, the government, working with partners, opened the new 150-bed treatment facility. We know that that is not enough. That is why we welcome the increased level of support and assistance from the government of the United States, in which they will assist us in working and ensuring engineering works are completed for the opening of 17 additional treatment facilities.
Mr. Minister, one Ebola-related piece of news is I'm reading that the president has received the report of the special board of inquiry pertaining to what took place in West Point when it was reported that the military shot at some of the protesters there. Did the president say that the military was responsible for what took place?
Certainly, the entire military cannot be responsible for what took place. Individuals are alleged to have acted outside their specific orders. And so the president is saying that if individuals acted outside their specific orders, then those individuals are culpable and must be made to answer fully. The president was very clear. The military must remain accountable to the people. She even expanded and requested additional work be done to include the National Human Rights Commission, to work along with throughout this process. It's very important that we continue, given the harsh experiences of our people with their military, that we continue to build confidence between the people and the military.
Liberia's Information Minister Louise Brown was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. A senior United Nations official says the escalating Ebola crisis in Liberia is threatening the social fabric of the country. He says the outbreak is reversing many of the social, economic, and political gains achieved since Liberia emerged from civil war. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
West Africa is faced with an Ebola epidemic of historic proportions, with the virus likely to infect tens of thousands of people. The World Health Organization says 113 new cases of Ebola were reported during a single 24-hour period last week in Liberia. UN Special Representative Antonio Vigilante says the number of Ebola cases in Liberia is doubling every few weeks and stands at more than 3,000. About half of those infected have died. Speaking on a telephone from Monrovia, Vigilante says the crisis is stopping development in Liberia.
While in the last years Liberia was growing at a very impressive rate, the projections for this year have already been slashed by half and perhaps now 70%, and I think we are not yet at the exact estimates point, particularly because the production in the mining industry and in agricultural sector and forestry sector are slowing down, and many of the concessions are actually closed or reduced significantly their activities.
Vigilante says poverty is increasing as people lose their livelihoods. He says markets are short of supplies and people are going hungry because food prices are soaring. He says a key priority is to increase the number of healthcare workers in the country. Vigilante says Liberia has about one-tenth the number of doctors, nurses, and support staff it needs. The country is also short of beds to accommodate the growing number of patients. He tells VOA emphasis is being put on communities to care for their sick because of this overwhelming shortage of staff and beds.
So that is why the strategy is moving to isolation and care facilities in the community, managed with the community, by the community, under supervision and under protocol that are approved by WHO, because the first imperative right now is to isolate and take out of their families people displaying Ebola symptoms to prevent multiplication at a rate that is exponential.
Vigilante says new facilities are being built with up to 2,000 beds ready in the next 3 weeks. But he says beds without needed staff will be of little use. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Nigeria, up to 75% of the nearly 60,000 prisoners are still awaiting trial. Those accused of crimes in the country wait an average of more than 3 years for trial, according to the Open Society Justice Initiative. The initiative is working with paralegals in the country to help those awaiting trial, set bail, and more. Martin Shuntek tells Ricky Shryak that while the long wait for accused criminals, many of whom turn out to be innocent, is a problem for Nigeria.
The awaiting trial period in Nigeria is a little bit over 3 years. So that covers a period from arrest up to the end of trial.
How does this relate in terms of other countries? And why could this pose a problem?
And we know that in Council of Europe countries, that the average duration of pretrial detention is about 6 months, while in countries with less developed criminal justice system, the average period of pretrial detention generally is longer. And Nigeria does tend to be an outlier. 3 years is more on the long side. It's a problem, obviously, for a variety of reasons. It's a problem for the detainees themselves because they are unable to work and earn an income and provide for their families and households whilst they are in pretrial detention. It's a problem for the criminal justice system because the longer it takes for a person to stand trial, the less likely it is that witnesses will remember clearly what they actually observed, what they saw.
And is this long amount of time in Nigeria a result of a lack of resources?
One important reason is that the investigation side, the police's, the detectives, don't have sufficient resources. The prosecution as well often has quite onerous systems and processes. So it takes a long time for a matter to go across prosecutors' desks before a decision is made. And even once a decision has been made, then there are often not enough courtrooms and judges.
Is it a case also of a misallocation of funds?
The allocation of budget is one issue. I believe another issue, at least from the literature that I've read, is that there's a problem of corruption, certainly within aspects of the police force. so that often it's in the interest of the police to arrest a large number of people, arrest them fairly arbitrarily, and then try and keep them in pretrial detention for as long as possible so as to extract a bribe either from the detainees themselves or from their family members.
Open Society Justice Initiative sponsors some paralegals who are working in Nigeria to help. Is that also a case where a lot of these people who have been accused don't have access to a lawyer?
People are unable to afford a lawyer, so that they are not represented. So one potential intervention certainly are paralegals. They're not lawyers, so they cannot represent people at trial, but they can certainly advise and assist people awaiting trial as to what grounds they might give for applying for bail, for example. So overall, probably around 50,000 to 60,000 people are imprisoned in Nigeria, and out of those, between two-thirds and three-quarters have not been convicted. In other words, they're awaiting trial or awaiting the finalization of their trial.
That was Martin Shuntek, Senior Legal Officer for Open Society's Justice Initiative. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Washington, D.C. It is Wednesday morning, September 24th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. South Sudan's warring parties are sitting down for another round of peace talks in Ethiopia, though recent fighting is once again threatening to derail the process. Viewer's Gabe Jaslow has this story.
The latest round of talks began in Bahir Dar Monday, bringing together representatives of the government, the rebel opposition, and other parties to try to hash out a deal to end violence that has killed more than 10,000 people since December. Several previous rounds of talks, mediated by the East African group IGAD, have failed to reach an agreement, while every ceasefire deal signed between the two sides has been violated. Lead mediator Seyoum Mesfin told VOA the success of the current round depends on the will of both parties to end the fighting.
What needs to be done, particularly during this session, is one, for the parties to go on into the implementation of the matrix that would lead them into the disengagement of troops and fully implement the cessation of hostilities.
Negotiators are also discussing the shape of a proposed transitional government that may include both main rivals in the conflict, President Salva Kiir and his former vice president Riek Machar. Meantime, new fighting erupted in the past week around Upper Nile State, in areas near Malakal town, as well as in Renk County, which is close to several key oil fields. Philip Aguer, the spokesman for South Sudan's army, says forces loyal to Machar have been responsible for the violence.
It is the SPLA that has been in specific locations and respecting and committing itself to the ceasefire and cessation of hostilities. Riek Machar has been fighting all along.
The SPLA says it is now fully in control of Renk. A spokesman for opposition forces, Luol Ruai Kuang, told VOA that rebel forces have only responded in defense to attacks from government troops. He accused the SPLA of trying to retake territory to gain leverage in the talks.
The government troops made a deliberate attempt to attack our positions with the view of strengthening their negotiation position.
Ambassador Mesfin says the conflict is political at heart and that gaining territory will not help either side.
Whether this party or that party gains more ground of control on the ground, this would mean nothing, practically nothing, because the guns will not solve this political problem.
Mesfin says the humanitarian situation in South Sudan adds to the urgency of quickly reaching a lasting deal. The United Nations says nearly 1.5 million people have been displaced since fighting broke out in December last year, amid warnings that parts of the country are facing an emergency food situation. Gabe Joselow, VOA News, Nairobi.
A new study by the U.S. Broadcasting Board of Governors, BBG, and Gallup on women and media in Africa says education and language skills play a big role in influencing which platform women access most frequently. And while daily television usage for men and women is similar in most places, the same cannot be said for radio, mobile phones, and the internet. Viewers Maria Mandialo attended Tuesday's discussion in Washington on the findings.
The research focused on 7 countries in Africa, including Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Ghana, Niger, Mali, Zimbabwe, and Kenya. Keynote speaker Tara Sonnenschein says the results show that the political, economic, and social participation of women in Africa can unleash dividends.
We know that if girls are educated and utilize media and have access to information, they will participate in the political arena, they will exercise their power and leverage in the economic sector, and they will make a huge difference in the global economy.
While Gallup sample sizes surveyed 1,000 people per country, the BBG interviewed about 1,500 to 4,000 people. Magali Holt, the regional research director for Francophone Africa at Gallup, says opinions about media freedom vary from place to place.
Nigeria and Zimbabwe, where attitudes toward a free press are relatively low, then you have Côte d'Ivoire, which tends to be in the middle. About half of the people think that there is a lot of freedom of the press in Côte d'Ivoire. And then the last group of countries where, with Ghana, Kenya, Mali, and Niger, where a strong majority of both women and men say that the media in their countries have a lot of freedom.
Sonia Gloco, the International Broadcasting Bureau's director of research, says daily use of the different media platforms shows differences not just between men and women, but also between countries and platforms. With television, for example, there is virtually no difference in usage between the two genders. She says the reason is simple.
In Africa, if a household has a television, it tends to be a single television household still. Televisions are usually a prized possession and are located in a common room, and hence a lot of television viewing is actually a communal activity.
For radio, she says, there are striking differences in daily use between males and females.
52% of women in Côte d'Ivoire use television on a daily basis, compared to 28% of women who use radio.
Women tend to also lag behind men in frequent internet use, but Holt and Gloco say there are many ways to communicate and engage women in Africa.
If you want to say, well, I want to communicate with women in Nigeria, I think that still is too broad a notion. I would use our data for example, is to target down women in northern Nigeria. I will use a different platform, use a different language. I will use a completely different strategy than if I want to talk to young women in Lagos.
In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
In Malawi, despite attempts by successive governments for a national identification system, little progress has been made, and citizens of that country remain unaccounted for through a national ID system. VOA's TP Liro Kasilanga reports.
In the absence of the national identification document, Malawian citizens instead use voter registration certificates, passports, and driver's license, a development business and social commentators fear is hampering social and economic development 50 years after the country attained independence. Chikavu James Nyirenda is a social, economic, and political analyst in Malawi.
I think it's really a question of priorities and having a vision for this country, because the country could have saved a lot of money. We had a proper national ID system, and for some reason, 50 years after independence, we're still failing to get off, this critical project off the ground. And I think that's a big cause for concern. But then you can also look at it in terms of international security. I mean, the world over, terrorism and crime are big issues. Now, where you have a country which does not have a proper ID system, then you create loopholes for, some of these issues to actually occur.
Nyirenda says lack of an identification system is also affecting service delivery in the country, as there is no way of identifying foreign nationals benefiting illegally from the resources and even business opportunities. The National Registration Bureau, Malawi government's organ mandated to oversee the process of issuing national identity documents, says lack of funding is hampering the process, which is in its second phase. Norman Fulatira is the Bureau's public relations officer.
What remains is the second phase, which involves procurement of equipment for the production center, procurement of fingerprint scanners and other production equipment. This has not been done because we are waiting for government funding. to procure this equipment.
However, Nyirenda, like many others who have been pushing for the implementation of the identification project, believe that funding should not be an excuse for such a serious national project.
Really, I think when you consider that over the years, for example, we've been able to get funding for voter registration, for elections, etc., I don't see why we could not even have combined the two.
Despite attempts by successive governments, the national identification system has eluded Malawians, and so it remains to be seen whether the current regime of President Peter Mutharika will walk the talk and give Malawians the joy and pride, but most importantly, the right to have a legitimate national identification. For VOA News, I'm Chibiriro Kansiranga in Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Olmai in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with basketball. Mali beat Algeria 67-49 as hosts Egypt outplayed Mozambique 68-51 at the Africa Women's Under-18 Basketball Championships in Cairo on Tuesday. In the classification ties, Tunisia dismissed Ivory Coast 50-40 as Angola overwhelmed Botswana 104-24. Today, Wednesday, Algeria play Egypt as Mozambique challenge Mali. In Uganda, Rwanda beat Kenya 82-77 as Egypt prevailed over Uganda 85-77 in men's contest at the Africa Zone 5 Basketball Championships in Kampala on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, Rwanda plays Somalia in the men's contest while Kenya and Uganda clash in the women's event. In football news, Guinea will host Ghana at a neutral venue in the Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier next month, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, ruled. CAF has maintained a ban on football matches in the Mano River region, which include Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone, as a measure towards containing the spread of the deadly Ebola virus. In women's football, Nigeria Super Falcons is Africa's highest placed women's football team, according to the latest FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland. Nigeria is 35th, Ghana 50th, Cameroon 51st, while African champions Equatorial Guinea are 55th. South Africa is 56th, Ivory Coast 64th, Algeria 75th, Morocco 77th, Tunisia 78th, Egypt 87th, and Senegal 89th. Finally, South Africa hosts Ivory Coast in Moruleng in Northwest Province in a friendly match today, Wednesday. Both teams are gearing up for the Telkom Namibia African Women's Championships due in Windhoek, Namibia, next month. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, September the 24th.
I wish to call on El Shabaab militants that sponsored the Kenya's attack 1 year ago at the shopping mall to ask for God's forgiveness. Failure, the wrath of God will visit all of you. Comrade Mazi Patrick Okorokra for Oblo premises at an Arashuku in Abia State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. researchers say between 500,000 and 1.4 million people in West Africa could be infected with Ebola by January unless the epidemic is brought under control. The prediction from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, is based on a model that assumes cases will double every few weeks. That is it for this Wednesday, September 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good day.
Here's advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately, because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.